Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I am your host, Doug Wortham. On today's show, we'll check in with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and we'll spend some time with one of our Minnesota Military Radio producers. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Menke.
Veterans Day is a celebration of all those who have served and continue to serve our nation with honor and distinction. Each year, we pay tribute to American veterans for their devotion, patriotism, selfless service, and sacrifice on behalf of all of us. Their loyalty to our country and their great courage have made us what we are today and what we've been for more than two centuries, a beacon of hope in an increasingly complex world. We say thank you not only to them, but also to their families, for they too have sacrificed. On behalf of the Minnesota National Guard, please join me in wishing a happy Veterans Day to those who have served and those who continue to serve this great nation.
Thank you, General Menke. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me in the studio is Rachel Johnson. Rachel is the Director of Veteran Community-Based Services at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Rachel, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Doug. I'm happy to be here.
Glad to have you here. And this isn't your first visit to Minnesota Military Radio.
No, it's not. I was here probably about 3 years ago in a different role. I was the Yellow Ribbon Outreach Coordinator for Minnesota with the Department of Military Affairs.
Yeah, right. And then, of course, back then, that was Annette Kuiper, who, of course, she was often referred to around here as the Yellow Ribbon Lady.
Yes.
Yes. So we've got you in. You're in a new role here. You're with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. But before we get into that, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your background. I am told that you are a military spouse.
Yes, I am. So my husband is in the Minnesota National Guard. He's a first sergeant, just got promoted, so excited and proud of that. He works out at Camp Ripley in SASMO. I'm not sure what that stands for, so I apologize, but he does IT work out there. And he's been out there for about 15 years. That we have two adult children. I think our proudest joy is our grandson, who just turned 15 months. My background professionally, I have an MBA in rural health, and I've been working in healthcare for approximately about 20-some years, so really telling my age there.
Well, aren't we all, right? That's okay. Yeah, and I know what you mean, the pride of having a grandbaby. Mm-hmm. It is an unbelievable thing to experience and have what joy they bring to us. All right, so obviously you've got your husband is serving, and you were working with the Department of Military Affairs previously. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you found your way to the department or the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And you are doing a role, something with veteran community-based services. And that's a mouthful. And I'm just wondering if you might be able to dive in for us and let us know, I mean, what exactly is veteran community-based services?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a brand new team within MDVA. We've been doing suicide prevention for approximately 3 years underneath with the governor's challenge that went live in 2020. So what we're doing over there is we're doing veteran community-based services that includes the suicide prevention team, but then we're also looking at how do we take care of the health and wellness of our veterans before they go into a crisis. And our veterans, a lot of times people will see the acronym SMVF, and that's actually our service members, veterans, and their families. And so really wanting to make sure that we take care of the whole family within the communities that they live, work, and play. And so we're really taking a holistic approach to this and really starting to dive deep into the communities where there is the most need.
And when you say dive deep into the communities, are you talking about in the general sense of a community as in other entities and things like that, or, you know, specifically tied to the community that's affected or that veteran is, you know, whatever that ailment is or that issue that they're trying to fight?
Yep, absolutely. So one of the strategies that we've done already is we divided up the state into different regions. And what we did then is we really started to plug down where the death by suicide was the greatest with our veterans, because we know if you look at it at a county level, a lot of times you might see one or two, and people are going to be able to take that out, and they're going to know who that person is. And so to really protect the family, the friends, and the community to have to go back through the experience that they did, we decided to regionalize that and then take that information and really look at where are we seeing the greatest death by suicide with our veterans, but then also what are the resources there and how can we help that community by bringing in maybe it's toolkits, providing them with the resources that they don't know that are out there, and like who are their first point of connection to the help that they may need and stuff. So with that data, we have found actually that there's a huge need down in southwestern Minnesota and then also up in northeastern Minnesota. When we had our October 4th Minnesota Veteran Suicide Prevention and Awareness Day up in Duluth, that was one of the reasons why we were there, is to really start working with the communities up in that neck of the woods to really start figuring out what is the need, where are those gaps and opportunities. Next year, we're going to be down in southwestern Minnesota, and we've already started that work with our partners down there, working with our county veteran service officers. We're also working with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and then we've also reached out to a couple of the tribal entities down there, because we know death by suicide is higher with our farmers and then also with the Native American population. So we're really taking our work seriously to dive deeper into what's happening in those communities and really researching what is the need and working with those key stakeholders within those areas. Just because we're seeing the numbers higher there doesn't mean we're not doing stuff in other areas in the state. We're just starting there first, building up those best practices. So then once we go into other regions in the state, we can bring some of those toolkits that we've been able to build up.
And so when you regionalize the support, or you're looking at as a region the impacts, right? Because what happens in northern Minnesota, the way it affects our community, may not affect the same in southern Minnesota. And so you bring this team together, you do this analysis, you're then trying to provide whatever the resources are. So like, give me an example or give us an example. Like what were some of the things that you've identified that maybe there are some gaps or some things that are missing, you know, where you really need to put a targeted focus?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that we did find out too, just with data from the VA, we know that only about 45-46% of our veterans are utilizing the VA healthcare systems. And so once you get out to the greater areas, we have, being a heavily National Guard reserve state, we have a lot of these younger veterans and older veterans that are living in the outskirts, the greater Minnesota areas. And so we want to get them connected to their county veteran service officers or our own MDVA claim reps. And one of the ways that we're doing that, too, is we're partnering with MDH, with the Minnesota Department of Health, with their suicide prevention coordinators as well, because right now they're working on that analysis, too, and assessing those areas throughout the state. And so we're going to be working with them on that, too, to have that veteran voice and see what are those grassroots organizations. But then we're also going to be working with healthcare systems, too, with those community-based ones, so then that way we can be a voice for our veterans for their health and wellness.
And in what you're doing, this community-based services, you said this is all as a direct result of the challenge by the governor, or is this something that was kind of in the works anyway, and that was just the extra motivation to get this going?
Yeah, absolutely. It is something that was already in process when they hired me, and that was one of my tasks, is to really get this program up and going with the Veteran Health Navigator program, but then also the suicide prevention side. So I should back up just a little bit. So underneath our veteran community-based services, we have two programs that we we oversee, which is our suicide prevention program, and then also our Veteran Health Navigator program. So our suicide prevention, we have two staff members, which have been on here with Christy and Krista, and they've done a great job talking about the work that we're doing and how we're getting out doing training and education with our communities. And also building those relationships up through the Minnesota Veteran Suicide Prevention Collaborative. And so with the Veteran Health Navigator, that's really going to help us work with those community-based healthcare systems and other areas to identify veterans. Have you ever heard of the HERO program with Regents?
Yeah.
Okay. So a lot of so Regents Hospital, for those that don't know, has the Hero Care program with the Lee and Penny Anderson Foundation, and they've done a great job of identifying veterans within their hospital and then getting them connected to resources that they might not have known, whether it was with the VA healthcare benefits or with other needs that they're looking at helping them with. And so we're taking a lot that they've done in putting that out into community-based healthcare systems by asking that question, have you or somebody else, you or somebody served in the military?
So we'll take a quick break here and we'll come back. I want to dive a little bit more into the Veteran Health Navigator program. You can expand on that a little bit for us. So this is where we'll take a break. We're speaking with Rachel Johnson here on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We will be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham, and I've got Rachel Johnson in the studio with me. She's the Director of Veteran Community-Based Services at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And Rachel, before we went into break, you were just touching on the Veteran Health Navigator Program and one of the entities underneath the umbrella. And I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about that and explain the importance of the Veteran Health Navigator.
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned, it is modeled after Regents Hospital off of their Hero Care program. And so what we're going to be doing is working with healthcare systems of getting the questions implemented into their electronic health records to ask that question, have you or someone in your family served? If they answer yes, then they will be asked, have you or do you receive VA healthcare benefits? If they say yes or no, they'll still be asked if they would like to be connected with the Veteran Health Navigator. That navigator then will work side by side with their provider team or their care team. A lot of people are familiar with care teams and really taking that coordinated approach, but with the veteran side. So they'll be looking at the chart, making sure all the screenings are done. A lot of healthcare systems are already doing it with screening for social determinants of health, which they're going to be asking people if they're in need of any type of services when it comes to food, transportation, finance, etc. And depending on how they answer that, if they are at risk, that's one thing that the navigator can talk to them about too, to get them connected with that a resource for that. They'll also be taking a look at all the different benefits. Have they been connected to their county veteran service officer? If they haven't, our navigator will also be paired up with a claims representative from MDVA. And so they'll be able to work together as a team and make sure that they're getting the right federal and state resources and the VA pieces done right there versus having to go and doing follow-up with others. We know we lose people if we're not right there to help guide them through it. And so this team is really critical because we've got the clinical side and then we've got the resource connection piece to it. And then also helping the healthcare system if they're in need of documentation. We also know that we have veterans that are doing some of their healthcare through VA and some that are doing it through their community-based services. So really being that conduit between that community-based healthcare system and the VA as well.
And when do you feel like this will be completely online? Because I know you're in the process of building the team, but I mean, this sounds like a huge undertaking. And if we're talking about, you know, the multiple healthcare resources or entities out there, to be able to provide the support to each of these entities is going to take a lot. So I imagine that's something that's going through your head as you're trying to build this team. But when can we expect something to be available or, you know, at least started, implemented early?
Yeah. So right now we've been working with a large team of key stakeholders with the Minnesota Department of Health, with their Office of Rural Health and Primary Care. We're also working with the Minnesota Department of Health with Healthcare Homes. As I mentioned, Regents Hospital and also the Minnesota Hospital Association to help build this program. And our goal is to really get this up and off the ground in 2025 here and to be able to hire at least two navigators by summer of 2025 to get them trained in. We know the training for this is going to take at least 12 weeks because they're not only having to work with MDVA, but they're also going to have to work with the healthcare system and to be able to get embedded with them and also to learn about their communities. Same thing with the claims representatives, too. They're going to have to get to know the communities that they're in and stuff as well. Right now, we've been researching different healthcare systems throughout the state and really looking at that northeast and southwest side of the state. And then also working with our legal team of what does that look like and how do we approach this. And so we're hoping by the latest to bring on a healthcare system by the end of 2025. And so my projection would be we'd have this up and going live by the end of 2025, if not the first part of 2026.
That's what I was going to ask you next is, you know, where do you focus first, right? I mean, is this a Twin Cities metro area? Is this an outstate? You know, if you've already identified where you have some high-risk areas, North Minnesota, Southern Minnesota, and you mentioned trying to get to those two sites first or two places first.
Yep, exactly. And we're open to other areas too, but we definitely want to go where we're seeing the greatest need and wanting to make sure that we start there so then we can grow it out into the other areas and be successful at it.
Yeah, so obviously a lot of work is going into it, a lot of meetings, a lot of coordination, and I'm just going to go on a limb here that the entities you've been working with have been very receptive to this idea, this thought about a way to expand some of these services and really provide the assistance, the needs, or meet the needs of the customer or the client or the patient.
Yes. Everybody that we've talked to, they're super excited about this, especially those healthcare systems in the greater areas because they see a gap between, especially with our veterans that they're serving as well and getting them connected and not knowing some of those regulations and getting like paperwork in on a timely basis. And you might only have a certain period of time to be able to get some of that in. And so to really help not just the veteran, but to also help those healthcare systems so they can provide the best care possible for their patient.
And you already had mentioned that one of the things that you'll strive to do is make sure that you're connecting that veteran with the resources, their county veteran service officer, finding out if they are receiving health care at the Minneapolis VA. But if it'd be nice if we can get to people before they're in a hospital or being seen or treated for something to ask a lot of these questions. So what kind of messaging would you have or what would you tell service members, family members, veterans that are listening right now and they're hearing about this community-based service or, you know, the Navigator program? What would you say to them about what you can bring to the table and what they should do ahead of time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. One, if you're a veteran or a spouse, you can always, you know, encourage them to go and see their county veteran service officer. They should be the first stop if you have any questions about any of your benefits that you have. I always tell people that that's your first stop. If you're looking for health and wellness, on my healthcare hat, I always recommend going in for your annual visit, talking with your provider, catching stuff before it's a issue. And you're always wanting to make sure that annual wellness piece is done. Nobody likes to go in for a colonoscopy at a certain age. Nobody likes to do those annual pieces, but they're so important so we can catch things before they get out of control and making sure that your health and wellness is, you know, a top priority. Everybody wants to live a healthy life until the very end. And so that's what we would like to do is just to help them stay healthy and well and catch people before they go into that crisis. So definitely see your doctor on an annual basis.
So we've only got a couple of minutes left here, and we've talked on this show many, many times about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is hiring. You obviously said you're looking to fill these positions, the health navigator to fill the two positions that I'm looking at bringing on in 2025. But so if somebody's listening right now and they're thinking, hey, you know what, that might be something I'm interested in, what type of person or skill set are you looking for to be one of these veteran health navigators?
Yeah. So we're looking at community health workers or somebody with a social work background. A community health worker is a very entry-level position. A lot of times I talk to people about corpsmen. A lot of times, once they get done, they're looking at going back into healthcare, but they don't have that certification. This type of position would be great for them because they could go to school. They could figure out if they want to do the nursing side, the social work side, the behavioral health side, et cetera. And they could still be able to do that, or even like medics within the National Guard or reserve component to great positions, great entry level, because then you're going to be able to see where you could potentially fit within a healthcare system in the greater areas of Minnesota.
Okay. And so 30 seconds, where would you tell people to go if they're interested in getting more info? Would you just send them to the MDVA website, or what would you do?
Yep. I would send them to the MDVA website, minnesotaveteran.org. I also just want to put a quick plug in. If anybody is experiencing anything, please call 988, press 1 for veterans. We want to make sure we're taking care of you. And that is the best way to get help right at the palm of your hand.
That is awesome. Rachel, thanks so much for coming in and spending a little time with us here on Minnesota Military Radio.
Yeah, thank you.
And thanks for all the great work you're doing. And hopefully we can get to the bottom of those root causes and put some great solutions in place, especially as it relates to veteran suicide. So thank you very much. That's Rachel Johnson. She's the Director of Veteran Community-Based Services at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In a moment, we're going to speak with one of our Minnesota Military Radio producers. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Brad Lindsay.
As we celebrate National American Indian Heritage Month, I want to take a moment and talk about our Native American veterans in Minnesota. They have one of the highest rates of military service per capita of any ethnic group. The Department of Defense's research found that this high percentage has been due in part to their cultural attributes of strength, honor, devotion, pride, and wisdom. 25% of able-bodied adult Native Americans enlist in the armed forces, compared to 3% of the general population. Unfortunately, less than 50% of eligible Native American veterans apply for benefits they have earned. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Tribal Veteran Service Officer Program works to ensure Native American veterans receive the benefits they have earned. It provides community outreach to locate and advocate for Native American veterans and their dependents who might experience barriers in accessing services due to geographical locations. We are grateful to Native American veterans for their service and sacrifice to our nation. To connect with a Tribal Veteran Service Officer near you, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Our next guest in the studio with me is First Lieutenant Colton Rossow. Colton works full-time in the Public Affairs Office of the Minnesota National Guard, where one of his assignments is to represent the Minnesota National Guard as a producer for Minnesota Military Radio. Colton, along with producers from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, are responsible for identifying the topics and the guests that appear each week right here on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Colton, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's a little bit different being on this side. We were just talking about that.
Yeah, you know, normally I'm looking at you through the glass and you're in the engineer's booth with Zach over there, but we're bringing you in onto this side because, you know, as things happen inside of the military, jobs change, opportunities are presented, and you're going to be leaving the show to take on another responsibility within the Minnesota National Guard. So I thought we should get you in here at least introduce you and bid you farewell properly. But before we go into all of that, Colton, why don't you tell us just a little bit about you and what led you to join the Minnesota National Guard?
Yeah, thanks. So for me, I was born and raised in South Minneapolis, went to Roosevelt High School, kind of knew I always wanted to stay in Minnesota. I almost did go to Florida Gulf Coast University. The campus tour was fun. The dorms were right on the beach, which was pretty enticing. But for some reason, I just kind of, me and my family side, I was like, hey, you know, I love Minnesota. So I went to the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. And then in my second year, I joined the ROTC program. And it was probably one of the best decisions I'd make. So I was having a pretty good time at college, but also at the same time, it was super expensive. And then I had a lot of free time. I was like, you know what? I want to do something. I want to make sure that I have a career set on the path. And it honestly turned out great because next year, well, a year and a half later or so, COVID hit. And I really realized, because my degree at that time was sports management. And if anybody knows anything about COVID, sports management was basically destroyed by COVID for 2 or 3 years. So it was kind of a nice, okay, well, I know that I want to be in the Army, but maybe I should look at making the Army a full-time career. And that's a little bit harder when it comes to the Guard, because with active duty, you start off, you know, you're working full-time, but the Guard, you have to find those positions that open up. So after college, I was an MDayer for about 2 years, and then I met Colonel Ogier right when I commissioned, and I told her I wanted to be in the public affairs team. And she said, LT, you have no experience at all. You're a brand new second lieutenant. You haven't even gone to Bullock. So for 2 years, I basically bothered her, volunteered for every single event. And then I was finally brought on as a public affairs specialist back in – I got the job in January. I didn't start till March because I worked at Target Corporate at the time. And then I was able to meet you and Tom through Minnesota Military Radio, and that's mostly been my that's mostly what I've been doing for the last – it's almost been like eight months now,
yeah.
Which time flies fast.
Yeah, time does fly fast. And inside the Minnesota National Guard, though, I mean, obviously this isn't your only responsibility. You are in the public affairs, and you'd already said M-Day, so, you know, to our listening audience,
yeah.
You know, that's a traditional guardsman, meaning 1 week in a month, you know, a minimum of 2 weeks out of the year. But you have to have an actual assignment or a slot that houses you inside of the Minnesota National Guard. So when you're not full-time, meaning doing this public affairs stuff, what's your traditional National Guard assignment?
Yeah, thanks for explaining that too to people. I broke the one of our three rules that we have on the show.
Break the other rule about swearing.
Exactly. Okay. And this is the one rule I always remind people of too. So I broke my own rule there.
And but, Bullock was the basic officer leader course.
Basic officers leader course.
Yeah, okay.
So I went to Bullock, basic officer leaders course, for becoming an AG officer or adjutant general. So a lot of human resources. And so that is what I do on the M-Day side or the part-time side for the Minnesota okay. National Guard. I am the I am the adjutant general officer for the 194 Cav up based in Duluth, but we do mostly drill out of Camp Ripley.
Okay.
And so I am on the battalion staff, and my goal and my job and responsibilities are making sure that, you know, everyone's forms are up to date, making sure we have our personnel doing per stats, which is basically when you say per stat, we're saying how many troops do we have, how many people are medically qualified right now, mm-hmm. who's injured, who's missing, and kind of getting a basic understanding of where our people are.
Yeah, you have to track those key statistics to make sure you've got a ready and capable force when the
Correct.
Nation or our state calls on the Minnesota National Guard.
Correct.
So you already mentioned that you were at corporate Target.
Yep.
And then obviously you made the decision when you applied for a job and accepted a job with the Minnesota National Guard. So what's that transition been like for you? What was it like? What was the biggest hurdle or obstacle or eye-opening experience you had with that transition?
Well, first off, when I was working at Target, and I love the people I worked with there. It was such a great team. They had me – they welcomed me with open arms. I was working full-time from home. So I basically got out of college. I worked at Pepsi for a couple months. I was doing supply chain management right when COVID was going on, so that was a little bit difficult. But I got the opportunity from Target, and the biggest difference was that, you know, I saw my coworkers maybe twice a year. I mean, you're working fully 100% virtually from home. You have to be able to build those relationships, and it's a lot harder to do that.
Mm-hmm.
When I joined the National Guard full-time at the public affairs team, you're in the office every single day. You get to know these people very intimately. You get to know what their families are like, what they're doing on the weekends. And Colonel Ogier, Major Eels, Captain Ort, First Sergeant Dedek, we all got together in the mornings and we would just talk about, like, hey, this is what I did this weekend. How's it going with you? So I think that was a big change for me, especially coming from school where school was almost 100% virtual online my last 2 years. And then my first job to working in an environment where you're working hand in hand with people on a daily basis. And especially as the public affairs team, our job is to connect with people and make sure that we're connecting with people on a daily basis too. So it really works well.
And so in the public affairs as your full-time job then, mm-hmm. You know, that transition obviously was pretty interesting. You said you get to see the people every day. But is there anything that's extremely challenging for you inside of doing this public affairs business?
I think one of the biggest challenges, and it's become more of a challenge since I've moved to my new role up at Camp Ripley, is there's a lot that comes at you and you have to react really fast. There's not really a guideline or a booklet of how do you do public relations for the Army. I mean, there are regulations and there are standards, but it's really trying to figure out, okay, if this person comes here and says this, how do we react or how do we present this idea or how do we invite someone to come on base and then show them exactly what we're doing? What's our story? What's our message mm-hmm. that we're trying to push? What are the goals of the National Guard and what are the goals of what's TAG's guidance? And using all that information and then taking it all in and then making sure you're presenting it in a correct way, because perception is reality. And if people think something, they're going to believe that.
And I would imagine inside that public affairs realm, it's not like you can just be focused or have – not necessarily be an expert just in one area, but you have to have some knowledge, understanding about the broad spectrum of things going inside of the Minnesota National Guard, but also things that impact the National Guard as a whole that might be on the national level as well.
Yeah, and I think when you're just a young second lieutenant like I was, just working, you know, on the part-time side, you kind of just see the basics of what the National Guard is. But when you're having, you know, these meetings about, okay, we're going to promote this year, or these are our goals, we're trying to modernize, we're trying to work with people. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different ballgame of, oh, this one action has a huge reaction down the chain. It's like a snake effect, and you don't realize it until you see it come from the top and what you're actually trying to do.
Yeah, the ability to plan and think strategically is extremely important.
So, yeah, exactly.
Hey, Colton, as you know, this is radio. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit more about Camp Ripley and what your new role is. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. In the last segment, we were speaking with First Lieutenant Colton Rosso, who's one of our producers here on Minnesota Military Radio. And Colton's leaving the show. I'm going to start training in a new person here next week, I guess. And, you know, Colton, opportunities happen. And, you know, this is something I know you were very passionate about, was getting into public affairs. That's how you got to be on Minnesota Military Radio. And then, as you alluded to last segment, Camp Ripley is going to be your new assignment. And that's going to take you away from the Minnesota Military Radio program, although I know you'll stay connected still. But tell us a little bit about what your new role is, your title. I mean, I was told you even got your own building up there too, so that's kind of neat.
Yeah, that's actually one of the newest things is that so I am the new Camp Ripley Public Affairs Officer. And while I still am associated with our state public affairs, we're kind of like a satellite school, as I like to call it. We follow state's guidance, but we work hand in hand with the commander and the CSM up at Camp Ripley to make sure that we're promoting everything that's going on.
Which is important because Camp Ripley is its own little world. There's so many people coming in to do training, and the community outreach up there is extremely important to, you know, let people know what's going on. And I know that base gets opened up and there's just so much to do. So you've got a full plate then, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And some big things that are going on right now too is that we have a new hunting program and protocol. It's iSportsman, and that is really opening up the base to a lot of people that maybe don't come on there on a daily basis. I mean, we have daily hunting now going on. And then also we have our new child care facilities that are opening up. We have three brand new child care facilities, so we are doing a live promotion of that next week. Hopefully media will be able to come out and see those. But really the coolest thing about Camp Ripley, like you said, is we work hand in hand with our community. And being the military installation in Minnesota, it's the largest one that we have. I mean, there is so much that goes on there. And people used to always call it the hidden gem of the North, but we really don't want it to be that hidden gem anymore. We still want it to be like a gemstone. We want it nice and pretty, but we want to share all the experiences that we're doing on a daily basis up there. And then speaking of our new office, it actually was the public affairs office almost 40 years ago. And then it's just been a kind of a storage bin for the last 40 years. And they redid it all and we moved over there. So we moved out of 8-1, which was the main headquarters building, basically kitty corner across the street. So we have our new office there. I even have a shiny little sign outside that says my name on it.
Oh, for crying out loud.
I'm going to have to send you a picture of that one, Doug. It's it was pretty cool, actually. But no, it's great. They did a great job, and it really allows us to do the things that we're trying to do. We are starting up a daily podcast, kind of copying Minnesota Military Radio in some senses out there, kind of the format that we're doing. But we want to do a daily – not sorry, not daily podcast, a weekly podcast, kind of inform people what's going on at Camp Ripley. We have a whole studio now, so we're able to take professional portraits of high senior ranking leaders. And we just have the ability to do our job and go out there and promote all the things that we're doing in a positive light. And that's really what the main purpose of this new space was.
So how big is your team up there?
So our team is tiny. It is me, Mr. Housie, and then Sergeant Newbanks. The three of us cover everything that happens basically north of St. Cloud for the entire Minnesota National Guard.
All right. And so and as you said, you are a satellite office for the Minnesota National Guard, the main public affairs office. And so your responsibility, obviously, you key in on Camp Ripley. But if there are other events going on somewhere else, you could potentially get that task to cover some things. You're not going to be isolated just to Camp Ripley.
Correct. And that's the thing that the team prides itself on even before I got there. They're small but mighty. They do an amazing job getting the information out there with the limited amount of people that we have, it's a lot harder to let everyone know what's going on. But we manage it. We make it work. Everyone does all the little things. You know, doesn't matter who you are or what you are, you get it done. That's
all right. We got less than a minute, so quick answers on these. What was your most memorable experience about being here on Minnesota Military Radio?
I think my most memorable was I want to say probably our live shows. I really enjoyed doing our live shows together with the Roadcaster. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, live shows. Roadcaster, for the listening audience, a piece of equipment that we can bring out. It's mobile. We don't have to be here in the studio and rely on a great engineer like Zach. We just send a bunch of audio files, and then he pieces it together. So that's pretty neat. Well, hey, Colton, I mean, we do appreciate, you know, the time, although it's been short. You know, you've had a great impact on the team here at Minnesota Military Radio. And we just want to wish you the best. And I know I'll see you because you'll be training in the new person. But be looking forward to seeing you around the state and hopefully have you back someday here with us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, thanks so much, Doug. I appreciate it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's First Lieutenant Colton Rosso, who is our outgoing producer for Minnesota Military Radio, representing the Minnesota National Guard.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, this is actually Doug Wortham. How are you doing?
Oh, good, Doug. How are you?
I'm doing well. And Craig, is life treating you well?
It is, yes.
Great. Hey, I apologize. You're going to have to remind me. Is it Ugland or Ugland? How do you say your last name?
Ugland.
Ugland. All right. And if I ask you that again later on, I apologize. But, you know.
Oh, my God. No worries at all.
All right. Ugland. All right. Good. So yeah. I was told that you want to talk about Rees Across America. Is that right?
Yeah, we can talk about that today.
Any other big topics that you want to bring up? We have about 4.5 minutes.
Oh, just trying to think of things on our calendar. That's really our big initiative coming up.
And is that, are you doing this starting when? Is it, are you planning for next year, Memorial Day, or what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, we'll, you know, for Memorial Day, we just attend programs at the VA homes.
Right.
And
no, I meant for like the Rees Across America, though. Is there an event you're leaning towards right now, like a specific day, or are you just planning for next year's stuff?
No, so Rees Across America, it's a nationwide event that happens on December 14th across the entire country. And it started out of a Rees company up in New England, taking Rees to Arlington, and it spread across the country. So I think it hits just about every veteran cemetery in the country.
All right. And so, yeah, we've got a good tie into that because we broadcast on the Rees Across America network.
Well, there we go.
So I will I'll bring you into the show. Again, we're going to have 4.5 minutes. And at 4.5 minutes, you'll probably start hearing some music playing. And if you're hearing that music, you have to be done because I've got to say thanks to you and then read my outro, okay? And so I'll go right into that outro so you can either hang on and then I'll say goodbye to you after that or, you know, just hang up and, you know, whatever. So.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right. Craig Ugland. Love it.
Uglend, like Y-O-U.
Uglend. C-L-A-N-D. See, that's why we ask it. Uglend.
Not a problem. I've dealt with it my whole life.
Yeah, I bet you have. Okay. All right, I'm looking at Zach, and I'll give you the quick countdown here. 4.5 minutes if you're ready.
Sounds good.
All right, 3, 2, and 1. Joining me on the phone right now from the flag line is Craig Uglend. Craig, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
You know, Craig, obviously big supporters of the Minnesota Patriot Guard. We love having you guys on. And I don't know if you know this or not, but one of the programs that actually plays out Minnesota Military Radio on a weekly basis is the Reese Across America radio program. And I understand that you guys are actually preparing for a Reese Across America event. So maybe you can just tell us a little bit about that and what you all or how the Patriot Guard's getting involved in that.
Absolutely. Thank you. So Reese Across America is a program that started from a Reese company up in New England, and they went to go place Reese at Arlington Cemetery. And it was a natural partnership when the Patriot Guard Riders formed nationally to be a part of this. And we've grown from escorting the semi-loads of Reese from New England to Arlington to assisting in laying Reese across the entire country at all state and federal veteran cemeteries.
And so you guys are going to participate in this. So your participation, are you doing some escort duties again, or are you doing that and you're helping to lay wreaths? What will be your specific role?
Absolutely. So in Minnesota, typically, and the date of this nationwide is December 14th, Minnesota weather usually prohibits any motorcycle escorts on December 14th or the week prior. So what we do is depending on the cemetery. So, you know, we'll participate at Fort Snelling in Minneapolis, Preston down by Rochester, Little Falls up by Little Falls, Duluth and Redwood Falls. At Fort Snelling, we actually help unload wreaths the week prior because there's multi-truckloads of them.
Right.
I volunteer down at the Preston Cemetery because that's closest to me, and the cemetery staff takes care of all that because it's just 4 or 5 pallets. And then, of course, the day of the event, we participate in the ceremonies, and then the cemetery directors will typically have the families place wreaths at their loved ones' grave markers, and then the Patriot Guard and other volunteers follow behind them and lay wreaths at, depending on the cemetery, all of the other grave markers, or at Snelling. We have a list of KIA that we cover, and then I think we lay somewhere in the neighborhood of 40,000 wreaths total at that cemetery. So it's a pretty big day. It's a great day to kind of recharge the batteries because it's a positive day as opposed to our normal funeral missions. And it helps us get out in the community and participate in a very memorable event.
Well, it's interesting that we're already planning for December. I mean, here we are. We're just a couple of weeks out from Thanksgiving. And, you know, we appreciate the hard work that you guys do there and the support you give. Now, is this something where if people want to volunteer to help, could they do that through your website, or what would you recommend?
Yep. So it'll be on our website calendar for our missions, and there's also a link on our calendars if you want to donate for wreaths. We have a deadline where we actually get 3 for the price of 2, so you can donate specifically to that, and that information's on our website to help cover the costs, because obviously it's when you're dealing with 40 to 50,000 wreaths, there's some major expense there. So
yeah, absolutely.
All the information will be on the website.
And what's the big day again?
December 14th. Second Saturday in December.
Awesome. Well, hey, Craig, we appreciate you spending a little time with us. And again, thanks for supporting Reese Across America, and thanks for supporting all of our service members here in the great state of Minnesota.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
You bet. That was Craig Uglund from the Minnesota Patriot Guard out on the flag line. Before we close out today's show, I'd like to say congratulations to the estimated 3,000 pilots, medics, and crew who flew between combat zones and field hospitals during Vietnam War. These medevac helicopter crews of the flights nicknamed Dust Off were recently recognized and approved to receive the Congressional Gold Medal, the highest award Congress can bestow. These dust-offs extracted over 900,000 wounded U.S., Vietnamese, and Allied soldiers from May of 62 to March of 73. The gold medal, the Congressional Gold Medal, honoring these dust-off crews will be proudly displayed at the U.S. Army Medical Department Museum at Fort Sam Houston. Join us again here next week when we get an update from the Department of Veterans Affairs and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. That's coming up next week and on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. I hope you have a productive week and you find a way to thank and honor those who have and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so we can enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.